The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, dude?
All right. Since we're here and Justin's not here, I think it's only fair that we can talk about him now.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Bro, he's getting fucking sexy.
I think he's uncomfortable with it. I think you and I embrace it a lot better.
He's going, he's doing the program and it's become too effective now. I don't like it.
Well, I'm nervous. I'm nervous because he's become so good looking. All the attention's starting to happen, and he is not the spotlight guy that he's going to get fat on purpose just because he doesn't want that attention.
No, what we need to do, he's addicted. He's addicted to the fitness. He's addicted to the ripness.
Well, he's in love with the program.
What we need to do is we need to start training him. We need to give him a program that we developed to make him fat. We need to. He needs to train incorrectly to reverse all the ridiculous results he's just gotten.
I don't know if we can trick him. He's pretty smart.
It's too... he's very smart. But now he's very sexy, too. And we cannot have that.
Well, what we could do is we could put, like, flaxseed oil and stuff in his drinks and shit, like liquid like that he would never know.
God damn it. We gotta sneak calories.
Shit!
It's too effective. The program is too effective. The nutrition survival guide is too effective. The fasting guide... That's like the secret, right?
Yeah, he has all the answers now, bro.
He did that, and then, did you see his glutes the other day?
I did.
Round and beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Apple bottom.
Did you see me cry?
A little bit.
A tear came down my face, and I realized how amazingly beautiful his ass became. We cannot have this anymore. Listen, listeners, mindpumpradio.com, you can see the program that he was doing. We got to take him off, though.
Yeah, no more for him, dude.
Our egos can't handle
this. Yeah, there's not enough room for three sexy guys in here. I'm not okay with that.
Fuck that shit. Yeah. Next, we're gonna make him fat and unattractive, so that we feel better about ourselves.
That's right.
Mindpumpradio.com. Click on the yellow button. Everything's on sale. Which, you know what I just realized?
What?
More people are gonna get insanely sexy now.
And smarter.
Because the price is stupid.
Oh yeah.
It's so stupid.
I think it's too low. I think people are deterred because it's so low, because they think like, oh, it's only $97. It must not be that good. I think I'm with Doug. I think we should raise it up to like $900.
Well, bro, look at it. $900 will make more sense. Look at all the shit that they get. They get the MAPS anabolic program, 3-phase program. It's got blueprints, workout videos, it's got trigger session concept. Who talks about trigger sessions?
Yeah.
Nobody.
Yeah.
No, we invented that shit.
Well, how about the nutrition survival guide that we put together? We comprise that thing over like a year of Justin and I going back and forth on what we thought was the perfect way to teach somebody how to eat everything from different levels of consuming and then breaking down your macronutrients per body type.
I mean, God, it's damn it.
So much detail for that low of a price is crazy to
Revolutionary,
me.
Revolutionary information available. It's thrown in there. The fasting guide. Who does a fasting guide? Nobody. You know why? Because nobody's as smart as we are. Nobody is as smart as we are. And now there's three super sexy dudes talking about this program. Soon to be two sexy dudes. Me and Adam don't like the fact that Justin's gotten too sexy. The 6-pack formula, don't forget that shit.
Oh, no.
That's perfect for summer, right? You do the program, build out your abs, you get blocks.
This is the perfect program to hop onto right now if you're trying to get ready for summer.
Blocks for abs. Bricks. Mindpumpradio.com. Click on the yellow button.
Do it.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
Welcome to Mind Pump. Justin, hit it.
Yeah!
Oh, I didn't have it.
Did you ever know that you're my hero?
Oh, there it is.
Sorry.
I have a confession to make.
Hell yeah.
The other night I couldn't sleep.
I already know where this is going.
I couldn't sleep. And so instead of getting up and masturbating.
Of course, bro. It's always masturbation,
instead
dude.
Instead of doing that, yeah. I imagined
this is real life,
I imagined man. Justin's voice.
Oh.
And
wow. Got the same similar effect.
And I it was similar.
But did I perform better
than what?
When you're dreaming about it and it woke you up?
No, what? It just it just relaxed me.
Let
me
can I say that when we get on this when we get on these mics, dude, and Sal gets to talking, it reminds me of like what we were like in high school when we talk, because masturbation has to come. I talk about the size of my cock, and he talks about masturbation at least one at once in every single episode. I'm like, this is so so high school, right? It is, it but is. You know what though? Like, I give you shit, but it also I think that's why we like it. I think it keeps us young. It still makes
bro,
me feel
true. I just read a study. I swear,
I kind of talk about my balls.
He does. He talks about balls a lot.
You
do. He does.
Balls, masturbation, cock size.
There it is. Well,
that's why we fit. We're like Voltron, bro.
Look,
each piece
it goes balls,
creates the
then
perfect
cock, and then masturbation, because it all has to have a function at the end.
So I read a study, you guys. This is true. I
what does
swear.
Doug do?
Listen to this.
No.
Doug holds it.
Yeah. Doug's the jockstrap.
Doug holds it. You're the balls. I'm the cock. The masturbator. Doug holds it.
No, Doug's
the
hand.
Doug cups the balls.
It like all makes up that. What's that one outfit that that guy? God, what's his name?
I love when you do that.
Never mind. I fucked it up. Borat. Borat.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
Borat? He's got that like.
You know what I like?
String jumpsuit.
I like the guy in the room that uses the least amount of marijuana, forgets the most shit. Yeah, right.
That is true. Yeah. It is.
It is.
He's like,
true.
Hey guys. Oh shit.
God, I forgot. brain.
So no, I read a study, guys, that frequent ejaculation dramatically reduces the risk of prostate cancer.
I believe that.
So if you don't want to have prostate cancer, you need to go approach your girlfriend and tell her to help you out. Because if she loves you, she will help you prevent prostate cancer by increasing the amount of times you ejaculate.
Let's see how many guys use that. That might actually
ladies, work. Do you want your boyfriend and husband?
Honey, do you really care about my health and longevity?
Right.
If you do, you'll take care of me right now.
Yeah.
I know.
And you'd rather have them
I know you did it this afternoon already, but
you'd rather have them check it, right?
Yeah.
Instead of that doctor with the big old meat hooks.
Oh.
God, that was a horrible experience.
Did you get your prostate checked?
Yeah, bro.
You've had a finger in the butthole already.
It was like this guy, and nothing wrong with, you know, he's like this Middle Eastern guy, big ass hairy hands.
Oh dude, gross. God. Way to set the stage. Because
the first thing you do is you look at his hands.
I thought he was gonna use his assistant or something. Like, is there a nurse around here? Is there somebody? Nope. It was Captain Sausage Finger.
Gross.
So you had
what time was it?
Did not feel
in the morning or the afternoon, or what time was it?
It was the afternoon.
The difference is he probably had your asshole probably smelled like curry.
It was more
curry. had a lunch break.
I didn't have any that day.
Did you have a glass of wine beforehand to just loosen up?
I wish I would have. I didn't know it was going to be like so dry and not
they don't,
fun.
And they don't go slow.
No.
They lube up and they go right in there.
They rammed it in there.
Yeah.
I
had that happen.
It was not good.
I had that happen to me because I was over a friend's house and I ate Cookie Crisp cereal. Okay.
Cookie Crisp.
What possessed me to eat Cookie Crisp
that's
cereal?
It's not even a good cereal either.
Bro.
No, that's terrible. It's like cardboard dog shit.
Well, when it comes out of you, it's like shards of glass. So I thought I had bowel cancer. And
this goes back to your hypochondria.
Yeah, for the listeners, nature. Every time something's wrong with me, I have cancer. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh my God, I have, you know, something's
anal
wrong.
Cancer.
Yeah, something's going on.
Boom.
Here. It was the fucking Cookie Crisp. Anyway, I go in there and it's a doctor and she's like, well, let me check your butthole. And there's no fucking warm up. And by the way, it's not the bent over position. You lay on your side.
Which
for some
weird.
Reason.
I felt like I had to like suck my thumb or something. I'm like,
it feels even less masculine. Like, I'd rather bend over.
Seriously,
but
like a man.
Yeah, you gotta lay on your side and your knees in a like fetal position.
God.
And it's like, I feel like I'm
so
being
humiliating.
And then she doesn't go slow. It's like, rah.
You had a girl, bro. What are you complaining about?
Oh, that is much better.
I had Captain Sausage Finger.
Breathing heavy
on
your
neck. Yeah. Yeah, but my butt's tighter than yours. My butt's
He got up on the
He smelled like BO and
he got on the table with Justin. He got right behind and started spooting him. breathing on his
I'm almost
his
done.
Just relax.
No, no, no.
This is only going to take
you start
a second.
Petting my hair. What is that?
No, the doctor showed him a magic trick. He goes, do you feel my finger? Look, no hands.
Damn it.
I fall for that every time.
He's like the David Blaine of prostate checks.
Why do you keep checking it? Stop checking it so much.
It's fine, goddammit. It's fine.
I'm like, all right. I swear there's something in there.
Doug, is this what we have to look forward to when we're 60?
No.
You haven't done.
He's too young for that.
You never had your prostate checked, Doug?
I haven't been to a doctor.
He's like me. He's an anal virgin.
Really?
Oh yeah. Anal virgin.
Listen,
can we just go back to the ball coughing thing? Like that was way better.
Well, since you both have never had your prostate checked, you guys should check each other.
That's a good
idea.
And
we'll after the show.
Oh, I have another story. Like so about the, you know, you go in for a physical.
Yeah.
You know, they used to. And have you guys ever been in a while? Like got a physical?
Yeah, I had one. I have one almost every year.
And they still grab your balls and
yep.
And then you cough.
Yep.
Okay, so I was doing one for a physical for football. It was like my last year playing, and this lady doctor like was like, okay, you know, let's check your, you know, for your physical, and like I just dropped my pants and I was looking at her and I'm like, wait. And she was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. And then, like, was like, no. And, like, turned around. I'm like, what? Like, what? What's wrong? I'm waiting for her to, like, grab my balls and do the thing already. And she just was like, looking at me like I was crazy.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, I'm not crazy. Like, apparently.
You know, this works on all the ladies.
Apparently, they want you to grab it yourself. And
you check it.
Like, what?
Why did they get
you're
so
the professional.
Since when
I do that every day. I'm fine.
Why are they so lazy all of a sudden?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, I was crazy for, like, taking my pants off.
Oh, that is hilarious,
you guys ripped
I was so confused.
You didn't wait for the cue, huh? I've been to this rodeo before.
Just that's right.
Drops his drawers right away.
What he doesn't tell exactly. us, he was there for an ear infection. he just dropped his pants.
Well,
check it out.
Yeah,
check it out.
That's it.
That's horrible. All right, what the fuck? Oh, Q&A.
Don't be afraid.
This is a Q&A episode.
I love some Q&A.
I do, and I'm uncomfortable when you whisper like that into the mic.
You know, so. I just want to, because there's so many good Q&A questions, I want to say something to some of our forum people. So if you get on Q&A on Instagram and we don't get a chance to get to your great question, because obviously we only have so much time and we try.
Because we wasted talking about prostate exams.
Yes, you're right. Way to follow that up. So if you guys get a chance, then when you guys get on the forum, if you repost the questions on the forum, then Justin, Sal, myself, or Doug will get around to you guys. So if you don't get your question answered on Q&A, get it up on that forum, especially if it's a good fitness question that you have questions about, we'd like to try and get to everybody as much. I mean, ideally, we're going to do this for as long as we can and help as many people as we possibly can until we have to hire people to actually help that. And we promise not to hire anybody dumber than me, so you guys should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That means anybody can be hired. So, not true.
Which leaves the door wide open.
Wide
open.
So, first question is coming from Maddie White 93. His question is, why are some people's muscles always so solid and dense?
Ooh.
And other people's muscles look soft without a pump?
Squishy.
There's a lot of ways to answer
this. So how to build, how to build solid muscle. So I'm gonna assume he's talking about two people with relative equal leanness, mm-hmm. both built, right?
One looks the part.
But one person's muscles look like granite. Yeah. And the other person's muscles don't. So I'm going to give you an example of two bodybuilders off the top of my head, professionals, who kind of fall in this category, okay? I'm going to give you two, and these are 90s bodybuilders. So why? Because that's when I followed bodybuilding, because I'm older than you. Dorian Yates had a very dense, hard look to his body, right? His muscles look like you could fire a machine gun at him and they'd bounce right off. And
Adam's rolling his eyes. Always reference him. No, he's your boy, huh?
No, I'm not rolling my eyes because I'm laughing right now because I'm thinking to myself that Sal is about to give a great analogy right now that nobody fucking gets.
Oh, right.
No. Listen, you can. Real funny.
Real funny, guys. Real funny.
All right.
Continue.
I'm going to continue.
Listeners, don't worry. I'll give you guys a better analogy when he's done giving his 1990.
Dude, all I have is like Lou Ferrigno and Arnold. That's like my whole
Well,
reference.
So Dorian Yates, solid, hard-looking, dense muscle. He was one of the first mass monsters to come on the scene. And Flex Wheeler, who was very competitive at the same time, did not, and you had big, round muscles, you know, great conditioning, didn't have the hard, dense look to his muscles. To use another example, if we go back in time, Schwarzenegger had a dense look to his body, but it did not look nearly as dense as his favorite training partner, Franco Colombo. When they're next to each other, both lean, both muscular, Arnold's muscles, if he was kind of, you know, flexing, it still looked like they were muscles, whereas Franco's muscles looked like they were made out of granite. And so I know that's even further back, but they're more popular, so maybe people can relate to those two more.
Yeah, and I think you've talked about this before, though. I think that's even an even better analogy. Just explaining the difference between sarcoplasmic hypertrophy versus somebody who has who lifts
bigger muscle fiber,
yes,
or more muscle fiber,
bigger muscle fiber. So there's a couple ways that I would respond to this, and I, personally myself, I notice the difference in my own physique based off of how I'm training. So when I'm following our phase one in MAPS, which is typically geared towards heavier,
less
yes,
reps.
Less reps, a lot of mass building. I get a much denser, harder feel and look to my muscles. As we transition into more of the hypertrophy phase of our MAPS anabolic, where you start getting later into phase three, a lot of supersetting, a lot of high repetitions, you're getting a lot of sarcoplasmic hypertrophy because you're getting a pump. I start to get that more pumped look. I get a more bubbly look to my muscles. So I'm in that phase right now as I'm getting closer to stage because I need to have a bubblier look. That'll make me look more aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Does it mean I'm more muscular? Does it mean I necessarily look harder or less hard? Well, you know, it's not that so much as it gives me more of this bubble look. Now, that's myself personally. There's a lot of other factors, though, that come into play here. So if you were you don't know if someone's at the gym and they're depleted. And maybe they don't have as much water. So our muscle bellies are comprised of carbohydrates and water. And a big, tall guy like me with long muscle bellies, I can make my body look very, very different within the same day, depending on what I'm doing nutritionally. So if I'm very low carbohydrate and I have moderate to average or low amount of water in my body, I have a very soft, flat look to me. The moment I load my glycogen levels all the way up, load myself up with a ton of water, like 3/4 to a gallon of water, I expand. I look like I grow and I look like I added 20 pounds to my body just by manipulating my carbohydrates and my water.
The body boner.
So, yes, exactly. It's like the body boner. It's a great way to explain that. And then I also believe that genetics play a sure. major role, too. Some people just come out the womb already looking on. I mean, we just interviewed a female bodybuilder, a whip figure
competitor.
Yeah, and she has got this. I mean, she's 12 weeks out from a show, and she looks harder than I look right now. You know, she's just got this great, solid physique to her. And Sal went to school with her when she was very young, and he said, man, she looked like that when she was young. She's just got these great genetics.
Definitely someone you want to have kids with.
Yeah. So,
because you're going to spit out some Olympiads.
Yeah. No, so, and which that goes back to when you think of great another analogy, Sal, is when you talk about Olympia athletes.
Starting a dating service or something.
Is, you know, some people, and it's not to say that you can't compete. I think I'm somebody who I belong doing something like long distance running or swimming, is what my body is built for. It is not built for bodybuilding. Now, I've carved it, I've shaped it, I've worked my ass off to get on stage. But there is most certainly a genetic guy out there who could put in probably half the work and look just as good, if not better, than I am. Just because genetically they've got it. They've got the shorter origin insertions. They're a little bit smaller and compact. They already have a grainy, harder look to them. They came out more symmetrical. As far as they're more of a, if we were to do some anotypes, they're more mesomorph looking, which means they look more like a, you know, bodybuilder or a wrestler. Those people were built for the sport. And if you take someone like that and you take them to the next level, typically they end up excelling.
Yeah, sometimes you see guys that aren't even that big. They're just kind of wiry looking, but they're either construction workers or, you know, they're grapplers or wrestlers and they're very strong. They don't have big muscles, but they've got that hard, wiry look to their muscles. Another competitor, one of your people that you'll be go on stage with at the San Jose, and your friend Craig Caperso, he's got a very dense look to his muscles.
Oh, yes.
They look hard, yes. You know, much more so than the guys he tends to compete against. So I guess in a nutshell, increased, and by the way, there's no sign, look, we're talking, I don't think they've ever done a study on this, and on top of it, this is very subjective. You know, what might look dense to me might look soft to someone else. So I don't know how you would even test this. But anecdotally speaking, heavy weight, low reps, lots of sets of certain exercises, like 5 to 6 sets of squats in the 3-rep range type of deal. We'll give you that dense, hard look. And the big, bubbly, more pumped up look will come from the higher reps and the better pumps. That being said, if you stick to one of those for too long, you're not going to look good either way, because your body will adapt very quickly. So if you utilize all of them, overall, you're going to look better.
Yeah, which that goes back to how MAPS is designed. Right. You know, it's very important.
I wish we had like more of an athlete like version of that instead of always bodybuilders. Like, say, for
you mean how,
like,
they looked?
Yeah, like a Pavel, like, you know, I don't know how to say his last name, Satsulin or
yeah. He's like, got that look, right?
Super granite, like, right. Just completely lean, but like, you know, the guy's strong as shit. And
Bruce Lee's a great example. He wasn't very big, but he looked just solid
and dense as
hell. And his strength for his size was incredible. Apparently he could hold like a 150-pound dumbbell out, arm extended, in an isometric hold, something like that.
God.
Something crazy, like 120, 150 pounds. And he was a little guy. So that density is interesting. And I don't know, I personally like the look. You know, I'm not looking to get on stage, so I don't necessarily, you know, I'm not necessarily looking for the big, billowy, bubbly look. I like the dense look just because it looks, I don't know, you look more like a workhorse.
Yeah.
You know, like someone that works out with heavy weight. So.
Right. I'm into that too.
All right. Next question. This is from RJ, A-V-O-R-E-K, Rjavarek. His question is, if we were to go into a branch of the military, which one would we choose and why?
Oh, that's cool.
That's an interesting one, because I feel like, back in the day, I would have had a different answer completely. Like, when I was pretty gung-ho about joining the military for a while.
Really?
Yeah, just because I have a lot of family ties to the military. My grandpa was in the Air Force. My other grandpa was in the Navy. My dad was in the Navy. All of them went to the various wars. I wanted to go into the Marines. You know, that was the first thing that came to mind, because I felt like, you know, it's just like a badass, you know, branch that I wanted to be a part of.
Well, they are, let's be honest.
Yeah, and they are. They're very, you know, very hardcore. And I actually was getting recruited for a while into college, and just decided that I didn't want to be a part of it. But now, honestly, if I had to go and choose, I probably would be in the Air Force, because, you know, it's... I don't know. Like, I have more ties. Like, my grandpa was in the Air Force. Like, I feel this like connection to that more. And plus, it's a little bit more. I want to say the guys that are, you know, behind the scenes, and less, you know, right up in warfare and like the first out, and like, you know, my priorities have changed in life. Mm, you know, like, I just wanted, you know, but that's me. I don't know. What about you guys?
For me, I'd say. Not the Navy, because being out in the ocean for a long time.
That's weird. I would totally think the whole Kermit thing, when the frog thing, they're holding his breath and water and stuff like that.
No.
You've been a Navy SEAL?
Yeah. Not at all. Air Force, probably for me too.
Yeah.
Just because of the technology.
That's what I was trying to get at. Yeah, technology and
getting in the tech.
Very
and
cool.
Then, I feel like the skill set is very different for having to fly some of that, you know, multi-million or $100 million. You know, planes and jets and whatnot. And so that would be it. I've never thought about entering the military. I've never had a desire to, but I have incredible respect for people that do enter. Of course, we have a voluntary military. So anybody who's there putting their life on the line, they chose to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a tremendous amount of respect for them. But but me personally, I've never had a desire to do so. But if I did, it would be the Air Force. How about you?
So I, like Justin, I was very close to enlisting. So right out of high school, like many kids too, I had the recruiters come down and pitch you on the idea. And at that point, I didn't have the finances. I didn't have quite the academics to go to the school that I wanted to. So it looked like junior college was in my future. And I wasn't really excited to be going to junior college. And the recruiters came around at the right time for me. And I actually had really thought about it. My father, those that don't know this, my real father took his life when I was 7 years old, and my real father was in the Air Force. So there was a part of me that wanted to go to the Air Force because of that. And, you know, then like I said, I almost got recruited at the right time. And so I was really close. In fact, I was all set up to do signing and everything, and that was the direction I was going. I did change my my mind last minute just because I also talked to you guys before about being younger and being very financially driven. And, you know, this was also around that same time that I've talked about. I'm between the ages of 17 and 19. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to make my own money. And I was moved out by 17, so I was already living in my own place. And so I was kind of getting the taste of, you know, being an entrepreneur, being on my own and becoming a man. And, like, I wasn't sure if I wanted to go sign up for 4 years of my life somewhere else, right? So I backed out last minute. Now I went through a phase later on that I was like, man, I would love to be a Navy SEAL. I have one of my favorite books, first of all, too, is Survivor. If you guys ever get a chance to read this book, it's Navy SEAL 10. It's a true story. It's based out of a Navy SEAL who goes in. He's Marcus Luttrell. He's the only survivor of his group was during Afghanistan. And they made a movie about it. But if you get a chance to read the book before you watch the movie, because the book is just badass. I've actually read it more than once, and anybody I've handed that book to has either said, one, it's their favorite all-time book, or it's one of their favorite books for sure. So had fallen in love with just the idea of Navy SEALs, what they represent. You know, I just think it's so cool that there's so many things that they go and do for this country that is so badass that we don't even know. They don't get recognized for, they don't know, but they're around the world saving lives and doing pretty badass missions and stuff. And to just to be a part of the elite, I'm very competitive, mm-hmm. and I think that would have boded very well in a branch like that. And then trying to become somebody like a SEAL, like I find it fascinating too that a very small percentage of people even make it through the training, you know. So just to make it through the training and to have become a SEAL, I think it would be awesome, not to mention the type of
right
missions that they do.
Each branch has their own elite.
Yes.
Yeah, they have their own
right,
elite forces.
Because I grew up admiring, and it's because of movies, right? Because we
Rambo.
We didn't
hear. I liked Commando.
Yeah, because we didn't hear a lot about badass Navy SEALs until, you know, later on. But when I was a kid, it was the Green Berets.
Yeah, Green Beret, Rambo.
Because of Vietnam.
Sure.
That's what the Green Berets did a lot of stuff in Vietnam.
And
right?
Green Beret would be awesome,
and Navy
too.
SEALs,
I lean towards SEALs because I've talked to you guys before. I feel like I naturally can swim. So the mm-hmm. I'm very.
See, that's why I wouldn't want to be a Navy SEAL. Because it's just like
testing they make you
for that.
Drown,
yeah, they basically drowned you.
Yeah, you have to be okay.
You know,
with
you got to be all right with that.
I used to, as a kid, I used to love to see how long I could hold my breath for and swim so many laps with holding my breath for a long time, and so shit like that I was already naturally into, and I was a good swimmer. So it all kind of, for me, it all lined up that wow, that would have been a great field
what,
for me.
What branch are the Green Berets from?
Army.
That's Army.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the Army's.
And then you have, and then what was Delta Force for?
Delta Force?
Is there a Delta Force or is that just a movie?
Delta Farce.
JAG is for the
Well, Commando. I don't know if Delta Force is Air Force or not.
Green Beret is Army and Navy SEAL is Navy.
Navy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, they're badass, man. I mean, you want to consider you're going to war. You know, you're trained to go kill people and not be killed, and that's crazy.
It's a different mindset, man. Yeah,
well,
I have all the respect. It's just like it's totally, you know. I mean, they're in protection mode. Like they're out there to provide, you know, what we have here in our comfort zone
and
safety.
I just don't think we do a good enough job when they get back. You know, really taking care of them.
Because, absolutely.
You know, you're out there doing what you're doing, then you come back and it's like, here you go, get back into, you know, regular life. And I think it's. I think we should do more personally. Yeah. Let's see. Next question. This is from JD_Kubiki, KUBICKI. Question is thoughts on active rest days.
Nice.
So, what's an active rest day? Well, this is when you're not working out in the gym, but you're still moving. You're still staying active. Active recovery. Some people will hear it be.
Well, know, I think you could consider an active rest day even working out in the gym.
Sure, mm-hmm. Sure. Going light, doing trigger sessions.
Yeah, I think that we've slightly touched on this a little bit, and I like this question because my philosophy has completely changed later in my career as a fitness professional compared to what I was early on. And early on in my career, even myself with my background, I still was sold on the whole concept of how important the rest is. In fact, I remember I used to present people that, you know, rest is just as important.
And you purposely not do anything.
Yes, I purposely not lift and do things like that. And it, to a sense, it somewhat made sense for me because I was an ectomorph trying to build, and that was less calories I would burn, and having, you know, less movement would do that. But later on in my life, I found that, you know, what a difference frequency, first of all, would make in overall muscle growth for me. And then two, understanding that, you know, a workout doesn't always have to be super intense. And there's a lot of benefits to still going in on a day off and still touching all these muscle groups that are sore that we would normally stay away because, oh my God, my legs are sore. Oh my God, my back is sore. Can't do them because then I'm just going to tear and break down our muscle. Well, no, you don't have to break them off and you don't have to lift even.
No, you move them. You get blood flow.
Yeah, more blood, more nutrients, more oxygen to those muscles is only going to speed your recovery up.
It is. And if you were to compare two people with normal muscle damage, okay? I'm not talking about excessive. Now, if you go crazy and you get into rhabdo, where muscles are breaking down to the point where, you know, it's bad, then, yeah, you probably do want to lay down and have an IV in you and, you know, not move. But I'm talking about regular breakdown, regular muscle breakdown. If you had two people in that particular condition and one person, in order to recover, just sat around and watched TV all day and the other person moved and was active, the active person not only would build more muscle and adapt better, they would actually recover faster.
Feel better.
They'd recover faster.
Yeah. Mm.
So active recovery is superior over to, you know, not moving when you're
only, I like to use these days, like, specifically to get outside of the gym mentality and working out in general. Like, I like to take these days of nature and, like, getting myself outside of, like, you know, my day-to-day grind and business and all these kinds of things. I think
chop some wood,
you know. Yeah, seriously. Dude, hell yeah, throw a flannel on and get the business. But yeah, like, do interesting things, like go, you know, exploring in caves and take, you know, some yoga and do things that are, you know, outside of the norm, but you're moving and you're active. And I don't know. I feel like when you think about fitness and everybody talks about, like, what to do in the gym and gym and gym and gym, like, you really need to be more diverse than that as a human being, you know? And I feel like that turns into a grind.
It does. You know, I remember years ago, I was probably 13 or 14. I had been lifting weights shortly, right? My goal was to build as much muscle as possible. And in the summertime, you know, when school was out, I would go to work with my dad. And my dad, he works, he's blue collar. He's a tile setter. So he does marble, granite, tile. And he would bring me with him to work every day. So school would be out and I'd go to work with my dad and I'd be his helper. And my job was to do the mixing of cement, the carrying the buckets of cement up and down the stairs and get the sand and all the kind of hard labor, because he's doing the, you know, the technical stuff. He's laying the marble. He's making it look real good. But I got to go mix the cement and stuff. And in the summer, I'm like, damn, you know, I want to build muscle. I'm not going to be able to build muscle if I'm doing all this work. So I would eat more calories, which was smart. I'd eat a lot more calories. But I'd also would notice that I'd build more muscle and I'd get stronger. Mm-hmm. And the first week would suck. I'd be sore all the time because my body wasn't used to all that manual labor. And by the way, like I said, I would also lift weights on top of this. But by the second and third week, I was performing better. And what's funny is I never put that together until much later. And then looking back, I'm like, it was all that mixing cement
and
shit.
Reminds me of loading trucks.
Yeah, it's like
same exact thing.
And I was still lifting weights, but doing that on top of that, I was doing the active recovery. It was like trigger sessions all day long, and my body just responded. I would always get in amazing shape.
Absolutely.
So do we have time for another question, Doug?
Oh, yeah.
All right, this last question is from Nicole E, 1234.
I think Doug abbreviated it a little bit because it's a pretty long question.
What are they asking there, Doug? Basically, what's the most accurate way to calculate what
caloric need?
How many calories you need per day?
Yes.
Yeah, the most accurate way to find your caloric maintenance level. Also, when you do find your caloric maintenance level and living in a deficit, she was asking how do I get myself in a deficit without
like losing muscle.
Yeah, without becoming catabolic, which you are catabolic no matter what. So
it depends on the tissue. Like catabolic for fat, you don't want to be catabolic for muscle.
Yeah, well, exactly. But that understanding that if you're in a deficit, you're catabolic. Catabolic mm-hmm. just means that we're breaking down, and you're breaking down something. You're just trying to break down fat, which we're trying to stay in that balance. I'm trying to find the exact question so I can read it verbatim how she said it, because she did.
Well, just to touch on it, I guess.
Here, you want to hear it here?
Yeah, yeah.
What is the most accurate way to calculate true caloric need and then an appropriate caloric deficit for cutting or leaning up without risking going catabolic or wreaking havoc on your metabolism? And then thoughts on what we think about carb cycling.
I would say this, you know, unless you have a specific date that you need to be lean by, like a show, if you just want to get leaner, I would say making the deficit small is more likely to help you keep muscle than making it big. So
oh, yeah,
I tell people, look, you know, if we're just trying to maintain muscle and get lean, let's put you at like a 300 calorie deficit. Let's just start with that and take it from there. And that doesn't sound like much, but that adds up. And yeah, you're not going to lose pounds of fat every week. Yeah. But if we're doing everything white,
wouldn't you interrupt that too? Like maybe bring it up to maintenance yep. and a little bit of surplus and then back down. I mean, wouldn't you want to model the way the body works in general? Is that you don't want to do one thing, you know, great. Too long?
Yeah, great input. Right? Absolutely.
Yeah,
this is where the mini cut and mini bulk concept kind of comes from. But if your ultimate goal is to get leaner, I would go deficit for a while, you know, maybe like a week, and then have like a couple days at a little bit above maintenance, and then go deficit again. That kind of goes along with the whole refeeding. I think that some people do.
So how I do this with clients and myself are somewhat similar. Typically, you can take for a female, you can take between 13 and 15 and multiply by their weight, and that'll give you a generic number for calories. Now, that generic number is kind of an area where you should probably guesstimate the start, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be accurate. So when you ask that, and you can, there's all kinds of stuff you can Google online for putting your weight, your age, your activity, blah, blah, blah. But none of that shit really matters, because for every person, for every size of a person and weight of a person, there's going to be all these different metabolisms. And depending on what you've done before, if you've screwed it up or not, will make a big difference. So the best thing you can absolutely do is, no matter whatever you try and pick, be smart. I mean, which I'm sure whoever's asking this question has an idea somewhat within 500 calories at least of what's eating a lot or eating little for them, and get yourself and what you think is that number and stick to that for about a week. In a week's time, you can monitor, and especially if you're tracking your water, you can monitor and check what's going on with your weight. So this is what I do with a client. I find that number, and like I said, for a female, I multiply somewhere between 13 and 15 times their body weight, and it spits off a calorie number. So let's just say hypothetically we're talking about a female, because I believe it's a female asked a question, and I get she needs 1,600 calories. So her 1,600 calories is where her maintenance level is at to maintain. So I don't want her going too low, because, you know, that's already pretty low for a person. Plus, we're going to get activity and exercise, which is going to kick up another 300 to 700 calories, depending on what you're doing. So I'm going to start her off right around there, right around 1,500 calories for a week, and say, okay, we're going to eat this for a week and see what happens to your body. Now, if you just stay the same and you don't gain any weight off of that, so there, we'll say this is your maintenance. Then from there, like Sal says, I'm going to subtract roughly 300 to 500 to start your deficit off. Now, like Justin said, I'm going to run that. I just lost myself. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you, buddy. You're on.
You're fine.
Yeah, keep going. Yeah.
I can't hear myself right now. I just went dead on the radio. So that was really weird. So to hear myself go, and then, okay, I'm back. Thanks, Doug. Sorry about that.
He's back.
So once you once we figure this out, then like Justin was saying, I'm gonna keep you in a deficit for a little bit, and then I'm going to refeed you. But then maybe when I refeed you, I might kick up some activity level on your exercise, whether it be higher intensity on your workouts or include some of like Sal's steady state cardio, because we're giving you a surplus of nutrients. But then I don't want to see a weight gain, because our ultimate goal is to lose. I'll try and cancel that off with activity. And then learning how to manipulate your caloric intake Based off of your days, I can't stress this enough. I think it's one of the most common things I see people don't do. And why I'm a huge advocate of tools like the Fitbit and the Body Bug and the, what's your other wrist one you like, Justin?
Basis.
The Basis watch. And these tools are a jawbone. These are all great tools to figure these numbers out, because everybody's days are significantly different. If you think you burn 1500 calories every single day, you're crazy. I mean, everybody is.
There's no way.
Yeah. No, you sleeping in by 1 hour difference and going to bed an hour earlier or later, or working at work. That day at work, you had to do a bunch of extra more activity. I mean, those things add way up.
And it's so not black or white. When they compare people who lift weights versus people who just do cardio, the cardio people burn more calories. Yeah. But the people who lift weights end up getting leaner. So there's a lot more going on there than just, you know, calories, total calories burned. There's repartitioning effects from muscles trying to build and recover and adapt. And there's hormones that play a role. So, you know, like Adam was saying, you pick a number and then just kind of go off of there. I don't even – it's funny. People ask me all the time, Sal, how many – what do your macros look like in your calories? I don't count anything. That doesn't mean that I don't pay attention. Mm-hmm. I've been doing it for so long that
you can tell just I can, by seeing
my body, how I feel. Right. Like the last 3 days, I ate twice as many carbohydrates as I normally do because I was really flat.
When you
really
say that, because you've mentioned that before, have you never tracked in your life, or you just don't track typically?
I have really, honestly, I keep track of protein. So I know how many grams of protein roughly I eat because I always try and hit around 170.
Yeah.
And that's... That's it. I mean, if
ever.
I could add it up right now.
No, I know you could, but you never have.
No.
Oh, wow. Okay. Because I'm the same way too. I track right now when I get close to a show, but I've tracked so many times that you could say a food right now and I could tell you how many calories and grams of carbohydrates and protein it is just because. So I've done that so many times and made so many meal plans that I don't find it necessary for me to count anymore. I can pretty much, like you guess me, but I put that work in ahead of time.
Yeah.
So I.
But you've got a date to be like, you have a specific date and time. You need to look a certain way. I don't.
And if I was in off season, I don't track at all. Yeah. You know, off season, I'm 100% like you. I feel my body and I base everything based off of how I feel and stuff. But I think a person who's listening and is trying to learn their body, I highly recommend.
Oh, in the beginning, you have to.
Yeah, I highly recommend getting an app like MyFitnessPal or Fat Secret.
For sure.
And and inputting your information, tracking it.
Well, you got to do it because most people have zero idea.
Yeah.
You know, when you tell them, you know, 4 ounces of chicken, they get 8 ounces of chicken. They're like, oh, here's my chicken breast. It's like, no. That's not.
Yes.
They just have zero idea of what a serving looks like, a cup of rice looks like, about, you know, any of these things. So you definitely going to want to add things up in the beginning. But if you do it long enough and you stay consistent long enough, then you learn your body and then you're in this wonderful kind of zen state, like, you know, like I'm talking about, where I don't really add anything up. I know how I feel in the gym. I look in the mirror. I pull things back. I move things forward. And that's just kind of how I do
it. Well, that's the beauty of it. You know, at a certain point when you have, you know, gone through the process, like, you understand your body and you understand, like, how to get there. So that way you can relax. You can kind of go off rails a little bit, come back. You know exactly how to get there because you've really been dialed. You've been disciplined.
Exactly.
You've known how to do that. So, you know, like, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, this point,
it all alludes to the next question that she asked, which is regarding to carb cycling. Well, carb cycling is effective if and only if you understand where your maintenance is and understands how does 200 carbs gain weight on you or lose weight? Like, if you have your everyone knows, but I mean, ideally you should kind of have an idea. We've talked about this before on Mind Pump. If you're an avid listener, that the body needs about 0.7 grams of protein. So it's 0.7 to 1:1 ratio for your body weight of protein. So that number always stays the same typically. I mean, it can go up a little bit from that depending on how low you're on something else, but you need that. So like Sal said, he keeps track of that. So that's going to stay consistent. Then your carbohydrates and fat are typically the two that you're manipulating. And when you're
flip-flop them sometimes.
And when you're lower on your carb intake, you should allow more fat into your diet. And when you are higher on your carb intake, you should allow lower. But until you figure out a basis by tracking your food for a good solid week or two to see what is homeostasis, then it's hard to say how you would carb cycle, because I've got a female bikini competitor that I carb cycle as high. She gets 300 to 350 grams of carbohydrates on her high day. On her medium day, she's still eating like 200, and I never drop her below 100 grams. You know, and that's damn near more than what Sal eats.
That's correct.
So
when I go low, it's under 50.
Yeah. So and his high is probably in the 200 and something.
Absolutely.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, every and that you're talking about a female who has a lot less muscle mass and size and weight, a female bikini competitor to him. So and probably trains at the lower intensity level than this guy handles too. So everybody is different. Then I've had other clients where, you know, I have to put them as low as 50 grams of carbs on their low day, and then their high day is peaking at like 130, you know, because they're smaller, petite frame, their intensity level's not there, their metabolism is much slower. So until you figure out where your maintenance is, you can't really truly do a successful carb cycling that your girlfriend or your friend says, oh, try this, you know, carb cycle 100, 200, 300 grams or 50, 75, whatever their numbers they're throwing at you. Well, it doesn't really work that way. You figure out what keeps you the same. So let's just use this for hypothetical reasons. Let's pretend that we figure that out and you figure out that you got your protein, you know what you need to eat there. You figure out that your body, if you eat 200 grams of carbs, and you keep your calories and you make it the rest of your calories that we're trying to end at 1500 calories through your fat, that maintains you. So your homeostasis is 200 grams of carbohydrates. So then if I'm going to cycle you, 200 is typically going to be your, you know, almost your high. So that's the highest I'm going to let you go up if we're trying to reduce. So then I might carb cycle you at like 75 grams as a low day, and then 125 to 130 is going to be a medium day. And then a high day is going to go back up to your 200 to two, maybe a little bit of a surplus, depending on what's going on with your body. That's what a carb cycle would look like.
Well, to be clear, too, carb cycling is a pretty advanced technique, you know. Yeah. So unless you're getting pretty lean, carb cycling, I mean, you're going to have days you eat more and days you eat less. But you start playing with carbs and you're not that advanced yet, it's not going to do that much for you. And I'm going to tell you something right now. If you low carb diet and that's effective for you, and then you're like, I'm going to carb cycle, I'm going to have two really high carb days, and you're not super lean anyway, so it's not going to make that big of a difference. What's going to happen to you is you're going to get hungry as shit, because bump your carbs up, your appetite goes up. I'll tell you that much right now. I go low carb, and when I have my two or three days of a high carb, I know for the next day or two, I'm going to crave.
Well,
I'm going to crave food.
That goes back to what we talked about with leptin levels. It's exactly what that is. You spike your leptin up by feeding the extra carbohydrates, and unless you have the discipline to fight that the next day, you're going to have a battle. So, I mean, Sal said it best before, you know, you're much better off, you know, eating about what you need with just a slight deficit. You won't go through those hard hunger pains. The more aggressive you are, which carb cycling is more aggressive, it is typically something more advanced. As I do it, as competing, I do it. So, but I even with competing, I don't do it till like the last 4 weeks or so to a show. Up to that point, even myself, I just take myself from, let's say, for example, me, my daily stay the same, Adam doesn't move weight is 4,000 calories, 400 grams of carbs. So I don't gain weight. I don't lose weight on that. That just maintains. When I drop down to about 350, I'm going to slowly start to shed body fat, and it's not depriving me whatsoever. 350 grams of carbohydrates means every single one of my meals, I get a nice full amount of carbohydrates in every meal, and I feel completely satisfied. So I don't feel that way. Now, the moment I start carb cycling, like right now, I'm on a low carb day and I am starving right now. All I'm thinking about
is that piece of bread next to you on the
Yes. I just got a chicken salad and they gave me a piece of bread with it. All I want to do, literally, it's dry ass hard roll and you have no idea. I just want to bite into it and suck on it. But that's just it. You have to have that discipline to know that right now my body is just tearing up and eating up fat because it has no other source of fuel right now as far as carbs are concerned. Now, I don't like to live my life like that year round. So when I come off of a show, I keep it around closer to just a small deficit to my caloric intake or maintenance. Excuse me.
Beautiful, Doug. We good on time? All right. That concludes our Q&A.
Boom!
Hooray!
Do it!
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.